Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We have a full studio, plus we have a call-in that'll be most of the show about compassionate politics and a compassionate...
We've got a great guest. We don't get guys like this a lot. We've got Robinson Work here, and he's going to talk about his book. I'm going to read the title, only because it's going to take 45 minutes to get... No, we're going to talk about a wonderful title, and our guests are going to talk about a very simple... This is serendipity. When I used to run poetry groups in Sedona, people would show up with the same ideas. And so the name of the book... Good morning, Rob. Prove you that you're there.
Well, good morning, Mike.
He is there. All right. Very good.
Glad to be here.
A compassionate civilization, Mike.
A compassionate civilization, the urgency of sustainable development and mindful activism, reflections and recommendations is the title of the book. But the only if you're running to your iPhone right now, a compassionate civilization, and you'll come up with plenty of information here. But the ladies, Peggy Chaikin and Kathy Kinsella are going to talk to us about what's going on locally first.
Thank you. Yes. Well, we're happy to announce that we're having an anniversary women's march on this coming Saturday on the 20th at 10 a.m. And we're inviting, thank you for giving us the forum, to invite everybody in the surrounding communities to come out and join us. You may remember that last year, the women's marches were not only a national event, but a global event. And here in Sedona, we participated, and we had 1,500 people turn out for that.
For a town of 10,000, that's pretty good.
I think so. It's percentage-wise. Collectively, the marches and rallies around the country represented the largest protest in U.S. history. So we were happy to be a part of that. Since then, there's been such a surge of activism and new organizations that have formed here in Sedona, in the Verde Valley, down in Cottonwood, in Camp Verde. And this is an opportunity for all of those organizations to come together. We're going to have a rally following the march. They'll be tabling. All the organizations will be there with information. People can find out what's going on and how to become a part of it. As political and social activism has grown, there have been increasing outcries of ways for people to get involved, and we're going to give them the tools. So we're asking everybody to come to the march, be a part of the community, stand in solidarity for this message of unity and standing against misogyny and homophobia and racism and xenophobia, and standing on the side of love and positive messages and unity. So please, everybody come on out and join us on the 20th. That's Saturday.
Where are you going to be?
We're going to meet at Creative Gateways Gallery, which is on Birch Boulevard. It's right behind the one of your sponsors, I think, is the car wash on 89A, right across from Whole Foods. So come out and join us there. And we'll be marching on the flatlands of West Sedona down to Vino di Sedona, a wonderful little restaurant. And they've very graciously allowed us to use the back patio and garden area for our rally there. And we've got wonderful speakers. The speakers are coming from the organizations that have grown out of all of this activism and be speaking on tying in the local issues to the national issues. We've got music and entertainment. Lunch is available. You can pre-order a special brown bag lunch with the Women's March logo on it, or you can order off the menu if that's not your thing.
There you go.
Is it edible logo? Or
No, the logo is not
so
edible.
Give us the time and the date again, Kathy.
Okay, it's Saturday, March 20th. We're meeting...
March 20th. January.
The March 20th. Is January 20th, Saturday, this coming Saturday, 10 a.m., at 45 Birch Boulevard. That's Creative Gateways Gallery.
Right. Thank you both for being with us. Stay in. We'll be talking to Rob about compassionate civilization. Rob was a community organizer internationally for many, many years, and then he went on to become an organizer of community organizers. And I say he's an organizer of organizers of community organizers. He teaches at New York School of Public Service and at NYU's school.
he's worked in, Rob, what, a half dozen different countries on the ground, and you work for 16 years for the United Nations Development Program in New York. Rob?
That's right. I was really, I really enjoyed that a lot. Yes, I was a global policy advisor after 21 years of community development, grassroots, you know, bottom up, and I got to help, you know, with some national and global policies.
You worked hands-on, and so when people hear the title A Compassionate Civilization, I think they think of something very abstract. But your work as a community organizer has meant that when you look at where we should go with a more compassionate civilization, and really, we started this a couple of years ago, and Mike had a question that really resonated with me when we, and he said, why is it, and we were talking about immigration, why is it we respond to something like the immigration crisis, these people fleeing Central America, with anger and fear and disdain instead of with compassion? Why do we go to this toolbox of negativity before we respond compassionately?
Well,
to
that's the country. That's the country I know. That's the U.S. I thought we were, and I think a lot of people. But we bought this whole, and this is a partisan show, so we don't mince words here. We bought the whole Republican narrative that of fear and that strangers are bad, and we can't afford the resources. This is crazy. This is crazy. The USA. So anyway, that's where that came out of, and that we bought the whole narrative, and your book seems to stand against that. Go ahead, Peggy.
Hi, this is Peggy. I just finished reading an article in the Sun magazine for January 2018. I don't know if you read that, but you can get it online, the Sun. And it's an article written by Tom Hayden that talks about this directly and how we tend to not go for the causes of our problems, but more for finding very simple scapegoating type solutions that kind of placate some of our fears and deeper visceral emotions that we have.
So it was a great article, but I want to say it was an interview of Tom Hayden written in 2006.
Yes.
Gone.
Yeah. You have a list of things that needs to be done to get to a compassionate civilization, and it looks like there's 5 points. We must each have a vision of a hope for future. So everybody doesn't have the same vision, right, Rob? People have different visions that overlap about what a compassionate...
Precisely, the overlap or oppose. Yes, indeed. I will answer that. Going back to what had been said just a moment ago, I really appreciated what Professor Heidi Wayman said on your show a couple of years ago about compassion and bringing that into action. And I want to just say again how honored I am to be talking with you on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. One of my great heroes, who was killed at age of 39. He would be 89 this year.
Wow. Oh,
so, you know, he really shows us how to turn compassion into action, you know, and I just want to say that he has helped guide me and motivate me a lot in my 50 years of work. But yes, absolutely. In my view, and this is just my view, human nature is basically good. You know, we are empathic. We care. However, when we feel that we're separate from other people, we can develop fear and act out of that fear, which then can even become hate. And we feel threatened. We forget that we're all interconnected and we need each other. So I think it's very natural, you know, to fall into fear, anger, hatred, greed. I call these the negative emotions, and I write about these in my book. Now, these negative emotions just keep coming up with all of us, you know. We get afraid, we become angry, we even experience hate, we get greedy, because we really forget we're so intimately interconnected with other people in this nature.
So you see, separation is generating a lot of the more you feel separation, if you look at, say, refugees from Central America, and the more you feel they're completely, utterly different than you are and have no connection to you, that would tend to make you more fearful and hateful toward them than if you felt that if you felt a sort of solidity, they're human beings in trouble and they're fleeing a difficult situation. It's a lot how you perceive it.
Well said. Yes, I agree. That you know, and the way you get to trust other people is to, by being with them. When you don't, like if you've never met somebody from another country or culture or ethnicity or race or sexual orientation, or you can develop all kinds of weird ideas. But it's funny, once I've gotten so many groups together where they meet each other for the first time and realize that, you know, just like Israelis meeting Palestinians, and they realize, hey, you're like me. You love your family. You need shelter and food. And so I think we find our universality, our universal roots, by meeting each other. And when we don't meet each other, or then we can, out of ignorance, it's really ignorance, we can begin.
Well, that was one of the things. I mean, that's what made the USA the USA. That's what made us different. It's the United States of America, and that we had all of these ethnicities. And fine, you know, it's become a cliche to tease Americans about being ugly, and we certainly have one of the ugliest we've ever seen in the Oval Office. As far as that representation goes, as far as being those things that you just said about fearful and bigoted and conjuring up all sorts of terrible things about people from another culture, from another ethnicity that want the same things we want. They want good things for their children. They want to see them grow up. They want to have a good life, at least the best possible. And none of this is different. And in the United States, we had all this here. You know, in certain lots of other cultures, I mean, Asian cultures that are more monoethnic, you almost could understand that. But this is the USA. We all came from somewhere else, for God's sakes. And maybe, of course, we're also talking about a culture that won't admit its own genocide. But, you know, that Native Americans just happen to be in the way, and it's just the way it goes. Go ahead. Sorry.
I agree with you. That's huge. You know, we can't, even though we have this incredible constitution and these deep values of freedom, and we also have, you know, that we were founded on genocide of Native peoples, on slavery of West Africans. Women didn't have the right to vote for over 100 years. You know, we have to admit these things, and we have to change our behavior because it isn't right. You know,
I guess one of the things I perceive, Rob, is that what you're talking about here is the unwillingness to understand the shadow side of American history. People don't want to face it. We want to talk about American exceptionalism, particularly on the right, but we don't want to face out to what the country actually was and what the country did. And it's not just even those folks. It's the arrival of immigrants. When there gets to be a certain number of them, it set off anti-immigrant movements over and over again throughout American history. It seems silly when you see the English didn't like the Scots-Irish, and the Scots-Irish and English didn't like the Germans, and the Scots-Irish and Germans and English didn't like the Italians. But it goes on and on and on, Rob.
Right, exactly, precisely.
We do want to talk about the book, and that when you first of all, there's every book is content and style and form, and certainly the form you do recommend reading through the book and following the logic of it. And even though I have not read the whole book, I saw the wisdom of that advice. That you, like any good writer, you develop your ideas, you develop your logic, and one of the things that are developed are the content, which is what we're talking about, the ideas of hope and coming together as a civilization and the compassionate idea. But we're also talking about, and this, you have a lot of practical ways. One of the subtitles is reflection and discussion. Of these things, so it's not necessarily the truth and the light. So you can pick and choose and jump through the table of contents. One of the and some of your chapter headings and sub chapter headings are fascinating. And you do talk about it, and I'm not going to, if you want to talk about it, that's fine, but how the genesis of the book and how it came about and how long it took that you spent, you know, you did this incredible work for the UN. You did this incredible work for some of these nonprofits. You did some of this work in other countries. That for 10 years, this book has been gestating, and then you finally wrote it all down. But it's full of practical suggestions on how, as a community, whatever that community may be, whether it's Sedona or whether it's Bangladesh, that we can get to a more compassionate and the world that we think the world that we want, rather than this hate-filled, fear-filled thing that we seem to be left with.
So what are the practical steps, Rob? We want to get to a compassionate civilization. We have to have a vision, each of us, of what that would actually mean. And I think in some ways that's easy to get started on. And the second thing that you mentioned was you have to talk to other people, connect up with other people in order to have some of the fear and anger disappear. What's next? What do you do next if you're trying to get to this goal of a compassionate civilization?
Yes, I think, you know, you get a vision is you one, you know, I have my own vision, you have your vision, but we have to ask each other, you know, what do you hope our community will be like in 5 years? You know, Sedona, Arizona, United States. What are your hopes and dreams for yourself, your children, your grandchildren? And then what obstacles could stop that? You know, what are attitudes, structures that could block that hope for a future? Then what are strategies that would deal with those blocks and move us toward our vision of a hope for a future? And then finally, what's your action plan? You know, what are you going to do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? What are we each going to do to achieve those strategies, deal with those blocks and obstacles and impediments, and realize our vision? So it's really strategic planning. It's the Institute of Cultural Affairs technology of participation strategic planning process that I use at the beginning of the book. So I think you need to do kind of some strategic thinking.
It's interesting that you said, you know, what do we want our community, Sedona community, and the Verde Valley community to look like in the next 5 years, because we have unique opportunities out here to craft what we want that to look like. We have every office in Arizona is up for election in 2018. So you're talking about, you know, strategizing. Well, to strategize on a very practical level to form the community that you want, you have to be strategizing that now, bringing that into action for these 2018 elections so that you put people in office that can help you create the community that you want, not the community that you necessarily, at least on the national level, have at the moment. We can make these changes, and we start here locally.
Suppose, Rob, you're working with, like, let's say people in Nepal or somewhere, and there's conflict between different ethnic groups or between different economic groups or just general misunderstanding. How do you approach that? Or another country that you might think be a good target. How do you approach going into a country where there's a lot of conflict so that you get people together? I mean, how do you do it, I guess, in a practical way?
It's very difficult, as you say, especially if there's armed conflict going on, as there was in Nepal. Speaking of Nepal, I just got word that they're translating the book into Nepali and going to be giving a copy to every parliamentarian in the government. You may know there's a new constitution in Nepal. That a lot of people died to get this constitution approved. I was in Nepal when the conflict was going on. I wasn't directly there for that, to deal with that, but I was with the UN, and we were working on decentralizing the Millennium Development Goals in Nepal, working with local nonprofits and local governments. So I think you just have to keep inviting people to talk to each other and to show up, you know, at the village hall, you know, for discussion, or at the school, village school. Or I remember meeting on hilltops in Nepal with, you know, the tradition, the women lined up on one side, the men lined up on the other side. We're all sitting there on the ground. And, you know, people had different views. I remember asking them, what are your hopes for the future? And one lady said, I hope that we all can realize equanimity and accept both tragedy and joy equally. And I thought, my, these are spiritual people. These are Buddhists and Hindus. You know, how many people would say that if you ask them what you hope for the future, that you could accept everything life sins to you with equanimity, with, you know, equal acceptance and joy.
Well, that's so, it. You have a subheading called the Universe Story, and you do spend a fair amount of time in your book, A Compassionate Civilization, with talking about what it is to be a human. There's not a lot of discussion about that anymore. I guess there used to be, but there is this sort of philosophical bent, and we talk about humanity. I should start my classes with the hope that that I would recognize their humanity, and I would ask that they would recognize mine, and that and by that that I would screw up and I would make mistakes and maybe I would be unfair but in the end, we would give each other a break because those faults are human traits. But I want to talk about the global. We're talking to Robertson Work, a global leader, a global worker for human rights and dignity, and yet we have this. We're talking on a local radio station. And you can't get much smaller than the local than this, at least as far as a media goes. So we want to transfer that some of your the ideas that you've been doing on a world stage, and sure enough, I mean this sort of, and we got the Women's March representatives here, Kathy Kinsella, Peggy Chaikin. So we have this meeting, as far as I'm concerned, this almost like ordained meeting of the global and the local right here on how we can make changes. And there's any time in history we need to make changes, or at least Kathy referenced the political situation in the USA today. And I know you did most of your book before this situation, by the way. It just happens to be so applicable to what we're trying to live through with Trump in the White House and the horrors that he has in his cabinet, that it's this, once again, the serendipitous thing. You wrote this book without this in mind, or maybe in some sort of universal mind, but here it is, and we got this the march going on. We got you on the. So tell us a little bit about going global to local.
Thank you. Yes, in fact, I titled one chapter "The Global Local Citizen" because to me it's always both. You know, I grew up in Oklahoma. I'm an Okie. And yet I've worked in 55 countries, and I find wherever I go, I'm local. I'm walking on the local street, talking to the local people, trying to learn and adjust and honor people. But I agree with you, Mike. For me, 2018, and Peggy, you said it, is a make or break year for democracy, the environment, and the economy. Our country is in danger of becoming an authoritarian state controlled by the wealthy and their corporations. And this has taken 50 years of hard work by the fossil fuel industry, banks, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, and others to bring us here. You know, global warming is bearing down on us. We're in grave danger from that. The wealthy no longer need a large middle class in the U.S. because their capital is global, and they would rather extract wealth from the land and coastal waters. So for me, now that I'm in North Carolina, I'm a local activist. I'm a member of the local Democratic Party precinct. I help run the last meeting of our cluster precincts. I attend our revolution meetings, individual meetings and marches. I write, I speak out, I sign petitions, call my representatives, get out the vote, register people, support campaigns of progressive candidates. I teach, consult. And right now I'm just, NYU just asked me to design a new course, grad course on advocacy and sustainable development. So I've decided, and I'm 73, and I've decided I'm going to spend the next 10 years as an activist and a writer. You know, before I've been in the last 10 years, I was primarily a teacher and a consultant. The 40 years before that, I was primarily a community organizer and a policy advisor and a grad school teacher. So, you know, your life keeps changing, and you're always local. You always show up. And what can I do with my current health, with my current opportunities and skills and contacts. So I'm going for it. You know, I'm at 73. I don't play golf or anything. You know, I'm out there just like you are. You
once
know,
again,
on
this
your
is...
station, Peggy, on your march. You know, those of us we're going to do this until we drop, right?
Exactly. Yes. This is perfect. We are organizing in Cottonwood, you know, a small community, a short distance from Sedona. And exactly those, so they hear Robertson Works say that he's a precinct committee person and he's organizing. I mean, this is exactly what we're doing. And yet we're not always sure of what we're doing because, you know, here we are, we have this organization, it's called the Democratic Party. It's not perfect by any long shot, but it's all we got as far as an opposition to the things that you just mentioned,
right,
in order to deal with the horrors of what's potentially the horrors of global warming.
I think what you're making is a really important point, that it's if we just focus on the local, you can get lost. You can have you can be in a place like I'm from Oklahoma, of course, too. Yeah, you could be in a small town in Oklahoma, and your organizing possibilities would be pretty small. I think that the point that I like is to keep, if you can somehow maintain two visions at the same time of the global compassionate society and also of what needs to be done locally. If you can live locally but also keep your eye on the goal for human civilization. I think that's very tough, but I think that's very important. And I think that those of us who are active, a lot of times we get lost in the details or arguments with people about this and that, or questions about whether, technical questions about whether we should do this and that. Okay, Kathy.
Well, I think it always seems so overwhelming, especially when you talk about global issues like hunger, starvation, global warming, devastation of the rainforest. You know, these things just seem so overwhelming. But the actions that you take in your everyday life are what make a real difference. It's where you choose to shop. Are you supporting local business versus big business? What are you buying? Are you going to buy, you know, meat, which is lending to deforestation and starvation, or are you going to buy vegetables and support local farmers? You know, so, I mean, all of the local actions contribute to the global culture. And I think it's important to keep that in mind and not think it's overwhelming, but think about our daily actions.
Well, think about quality of life. It's all about your personal quality of life. It's about your community's quality of life. It's about what people in our local area want and how we see ourselves connected to each other as human beings. And it's in our self-interest to stand up for unity and inclusiveness. And I'm going to just go down my little list here and look for solutions to problems together, listening with compassion, using the tools of science and expertise, checking our sources, and putting people into office who care more about the greater good than their own self-interest. I want to give a shout out to Camp Verde for having a Martin Luther King march today starting at 10 o'clock this morning. That's one of our outlying Verde Valley communities. I just see people coming up and standing up, and the overriding umbrella issue is climate change, definitely. The group that's working Northern Arizona.
You have
Arizona.
A climate change organization. Mm-hmm. Here you are in Sedona, Arizona, and you're working on worldwide international climate change. Right?
Well, because this morning when I was thinking about you coming in and speaking about compassion, and I was thinking about the bottom level elemental issues that we all have to deal with quality of life and what we face here on the planet are fire, water, and air. I mean, what's more elemental than that? And here in the Northern Arizona region, we have the threats of losing our water, drought, and subsequently fire, and then our air quality with pollution. And we're not an island unto ourselves. We have to work on local climate action plans through our town governments.
Rob, I'd like to ask you a question of that you probably can't answer, which is all the stuff that Peggy and Kathy and Mike are talking about, all this local activity, all these good causes. Do you see any way all this comes together to we actually have a compassionate world civilization, or that at least most of the world is driven more by compassion than by fear and anger and greed? How would you ever get there?
Yes, it happens in Sedona. It happens in Swannanoa. It happens in Kathmandu. It's got to, you know, it only happens, history only gets changed in the local, you know. A Martin Luther King stands up, a Gandhi stands up and walks to the sea to get salt, you know, to oppose the British Empire. You know, it's always some local, the lady who wouldn't sit at the back of the bus. You know, that's the way it gets changed. So when I'm here in my local, I say, oh gosh, I'm just in Little Swannanoa, North Carolina. I say, hey, wait a minute. I am on planet Earth. I am an earthling. Every gesture I make, every word I speak, it ripples out. It affects everyone.
From the 80s. Think globally, act locally.
Well, here's one of the things I hear, Robinson, and then that is politics. You know, this is a political show. It's called Democratic mm-hmm. Perspective. I like, you know, in your book and in your speech, you go back to the humanity of the creatures. We're civilization, and we're made up of these. What does it mean to be a human? What does it mean to be an activist? We're a political show, so everything that's being talked about this morning, everything that's discussed in your book, although you don't refer to it at every sentence, it's political. So I'd like for you to reflect on, if you would, a moment, how, and don't forget that one of the things we've prided ourselves on, and I think I try to say this every other show, is that politics don't matter. You know, oh, I can't be bothered with politics. Americans don't want to think about politics. It's too, political and it's too messy and it makes people mad. Well, you know, tough. This is we live in a political world and we've got to be, and of all the people in the world, I think that might go along with this idea is the guy that wrote Robinson Work, the author of the book we're talking about this morning, A Compassionate Civilization. Let's connect, if you would, Robertson, for us, the political and the compassionate.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I have a section in the book on Bernie Sanders. You know, I thought about, well, maybe I should take it out. You know, it's the election's over. And I said, no, that's what I wrote during the primaries. And I was a big Bernie supporter. I was out there knocking on doors. But when Hillary won the primary, I went out and knocked on doors for Hillary because I am a Democrat. I've been a Democrat since I was 18, because that's just who I am, you know, my values, my beliefs.
Values, right? So, and we have to stress those values that the Democrats stand for.
Yes, and, you know, you can say, oh, well, as you said earlier, Steve, yes, Peggy, or Kathy, you know, we say, well, our party isn't perfect. Well, hello, nothing is perfect. The UN isn't perfect. My family isn't perfect. I am not perfect. But that doesn't mean I leave my family behind or I leave my party behind. I change my party. You know, our revolution has decided to make, to help the Democratic Party evolve as a more progressive party. But when it comes to November 6th this year, whoever the Democratic candidate is, I'm going to pull the lever. You know, even if it's some corporate Democrat, I'm going to pull the lever because I can't pull the other lever. So politics, I couldn't agree with you more that we are political beings. We've got to talk about politics and religion with each other, but in a respectful way. You know, we're not calling each other names, not vilifying each other, not damning each other, but say, hey, you know, what do you think? This is what I think.
You have a subchapter called Dancing with Time. First of all, what a great, and once again, you know, the first line, it's all in the glance, the stance, and the dance. It's all in the glance, the stance, and the dance. Now, your background as a poet certainly disqualifies you from doing anything meaningful in life. And I know that, and I sympathize with that. And so when I saw that in your bio, I said, no, we can forget about anything this guy says. But
I love it.
But the name of the subheading of the subheading is How Do We Live the Future Now? We're down to about 10 minutes. Not that you're going to get that all, but tell us about what you mean by glance, stance, and dance. And how do we live the future now?
Yes, I enjoyed writing that little section. The glance is your view, you know. It's all in your view, your perspective, your viewpoint.
The stance?
The glance, the dance is how you act it out, you know, how you put it into motion. Because it's all about the dance. It's all about taking your view and dancing it, moving it in history, in society. And what was the other one? Glance, stance.
Your view, the glance, and I'm going to guess the stance would be your position, have a position.
Oh, yeah. The stance is your value proposition. The stance, the glance is your view, and the dance is your action.
Very good.
But then what I wrote in that section, it's all about living the future now. The only time a compassionate civilization will be realized is right now, not in 1,000 years. It's when I, care about my neighbor, when I forgive my wife or she forgives me, or, you know, I was out with the grandkids last night. You know, it's how I honor them and their potential as human beings, as separate, as unique individuals, not as just an extension of myself. So, yes, I loved what you said about disqualifying poets. And I decided to throw in some of my poetry, throw in some autobiography, as well as some UN speeches and blog posts. And it's really a collection.
There's a poet, A.R. Ammons, from he passed away several years ago. He defined romanticism as a romantic as just think that life could be a little better. You know, I mean, it's one of those things could just be a little bit better.
Well, considering human beings as multidimensional, having your story told and listening to others' stories, to see them as not just a black and white and just having one cause or just having one dimension to themselves, and opening yourselves up and really relating to each other on so many different levels.
I think that's what you've been getting at, Rob, and I think that's very important, that people be seen and respected for who they are, not that their faults or their dark side or whatever you want to call it has to be respected, but that people understand each other and let other people see who they are. And if you share that with some sort of compassionate feeling or viewpoint. And I suppose you can't reach this immediately. What I like about the book, Rob, and I think people see a title like Compassionate Civilization, they think it's some sort of airy-fairy idealistic thing. But you have a lot of practical steps of how you get personally and culturally and nationally to a better place, more compassionate place for humanity.
I want to give another shout-out to Thursday's Corner Democracy at 4 p.m. on 89A and Coffee Pot Road in Sedona, a way to meet and share with people with what their cause is, what their stance is, and to do the dance. This month we're doing DACA, and we're doing CHIP, and we're also doing public lands. Come out and meet people and talk to people.
And Kathy, why don't you tell us about the march again, the time and the date, and then we'll go back to Rob.
Yes. Again, the march, the Women's March, the anniversary march is happening this Saturday, January 20th, 10 a.m. We're meeting at Creative Gateways Gallery, 45 Birch Boulevard in West Sedona. That's behind the gas station, the car wash across the street from Whole Foods. And we're going to march on 89A down to Vino di Sedona for a rally where we have speakers coming from local organizations. Last year was really, I think, a year of shock. I think people didn't expect what happened with the election, and they certainly didn't expect the actions that government has taken since. This is a year of recovery. We all get together and be a part of that dance that Rob's talking about and learn how to act together. And we can do that by coming to the march and the rally on Saturday, 10 a.m.
I'm going to manifest, as you did this morning, the little Martin Luther King. It's Martin Luther King Day. I'm going to read to you your own one paragraph from your book. It says, in a world self-satisfied with material comfort and accomplishment, we can manifest awareness of suffering and its relief by letting go of endless desire. In a world committed to violence, we can manifest nonviolence. In a world intolerant of indifference, we can manifest understanding and compassion. If this doesn't sound like Martin Luther King, I don't know. And you go on for three paragraphs like that, by the way. This is you are definitely channeling Martin Luther King and this wonderful anniversary of his memory.
So, Rob, the book is called Compassionate Civilization, and it has a couple of subtitles. It's available on Amazon. When I first went on there, there was only one copy left. It almost completely sold out, but they've replenished them. It's available as a Kindle version that Mike has, yep, and as paperbacks, right?
Yep. 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 One click. I'm a one click buying guy. Go ahead, Robinson.
You can also order it, of course, from any local bookstore. Look, I wanted to just shout out to the people of Heber. My niece lives there, Rebecca Bentley, and my grandnephew Lane, my grandniece Brenda. My late wife, Mary Avery, was born in Arizona.
Oh, that's a big name.
Her father, Ben Avery, was rather well known. There's a rifle range near Phoenix named after him.
Yes, there is.
And but anyway, I just want to say that I love you guys. I'm with you there in Arizona. You have a lot of important things going on there.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Heber is, talk about small town grassroots. A lot of Arizona, that's a lot of Arizona, I guess, and a lot of the USA, I suppose, that we want to remind your family and Heber and everyone else that you can find Democratic Perspective on VVID.org. You can find it on TuneIn.com. It's a couple places around on the radio. If you missed today's show,
it'll
be up there
as a podcast in a few days. We're changing webmaster, so we're a little bit we can't tell you quite exactly as we usually do, folks, about when it'll be up, but it'll be up shortly. Rob has a Facebook page called Compassionate Civilization. It's a good way to access his work, and also I think they can communicate to you, right, Rob? Ask you a few questions and stuff.
Sure. Sure. And there's also a blog titled A Compassionate Civilization. You can find all that online.
Yeah, that's great. Don't forget the Facebook page. I mean, you know, with lots of folks there, it's easy access. It's a great way to, you know, that people like Robinson work are accessible, and certainly the book encourages communication and discussion and reflection. And those things, and hopefully I could see that there's going to be a lot of discussion about this as time goes on. It certainly is an antidote to what is happening in 2018.
Thank you, Rob, for writing the book. I mean, I think it's, we did one program on compassion before a couple of years ago, and we did this one, and it is a question we have to ask ourselves, is why we don't have a more compassionate society, why our politics is not based more on compassion rather than fear and anger and misunderstanding. And I hope that your book will help get out some of these basic concepts, feelings, ideas, and thoughts. And I like the practicality of which you approach this.
Putting it into action.
Yeah, putting it into action.
Well, thank you. I hope.
Doris Breakfast.
Yeah, we've got like 1 minute, Rob. Do you have anything to say in 1 minute?
Tell your relatives in Heber to come up and join us for the Women's March on Saturday.
Hey, yes.
Very active here in Sedona. They've given me a big list of all kinds of new things happening. We're going to be doing some interviews of candidates for Attorney General, I think on Thursday, and we'll broadcast it in a couple of weeks when we have an opening.
Robinson, we do need you to come back. Robinson Work, A Compassionate Civilization is the name of his book. We need you to come back because we didn't let you talk. You stimulated the group in the studio so much with your work, with your life, for that matter. We did a lot of the chatting. So please, I hope we can arrange for you to come back. Is that going to be a chance?
Sure. I'd love to.
That's great.
See you on your blog.
Yes, right. Well, that's true. At least
I hope so.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.